You know what time it is. It's time for Ask a Spaceman. I'm your host, Paul Sutter. You've got questions and I've got answers. You know how the show works, but let's repeat it one more time. You go online, Twitter, Facebook, use the hashtag Ask a Spaceman. You can also follow me directly on Twitter and Facebook. My name is at Paul Matt Sutter. You know what? If you don't follow me yet, I suggest you do it because I'm talking all about space and time all the time and all the space that didn't quite work out as well as I planned, but I'm rolling with it on Twitter and Facebook. You can also go to the website, askaspaceman.com, or email me at askaspaceman@gmail.com, or go to youtube.com/PaulMattSutter for all your space and time needs. Now, we have one simple goal with this show. Complete knowledge of time and space. And on the road to complete knowledge of time and space, we have today's questions from Kiet N on YouTube. What are time crystals? And Benji on email. What exactly is a time crystal? Very precise formulation of the question. I don't usually talk about this, and this is two things. I usually don't talk about stuff in the latest news, and when I'm recording this, there's been some buzz in the media recently about time crystals. I usually don't talk about it because it's changing all the time. It's usually based on latest research, which is speculative, which in many cases turns out to be wrong. So it's just, there's no point. If I'm recording something for posterity, for our future generations of inquisitive minds, there's no point in talking about the latest news in this kind of long podcast format. And I usually don't talk about this particular branch of physics, which is called condensed matter physics. So why am I talking about something in the latest news based on a branch of physics that usually isn't my own? Well, a couple reasons. It seems that in the popular press and in the popular imaginations, astrophysics and high energy physics seem to get all the attention. I mean, which I am not complaining about because I consider myself an astrophysicist, and high energy physics is really, really cool. That's where you're getting all the particles and forces and fields and gut theories and unified physics and string theory, blah, 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 blah. But, you know, I'd like to give a big shout out to all my boys and girls in the labs doing really fascinating work that the public largely isn't aware of, except every once in a while something like time crystals pops up. These are topics about quantum systems, lasers, superconductors, properties of materials. This is the realm of quantum mechanics. And I want to start working in quantum mechanics into the show, but to go too deep into quantum mechanics is basically another show. Ask the Quantum Mechanic. That is a really great name for a show, but that is not the name of my show. It's Ask a Spaceman. So I've been looking for entry points, for ways to dip in where I can get in, introduce a topic and get out and get back to our main juicy astronomy, astrophysics, all the usual stuff I talk about. As we'll see, time crystals are not a life-altering object, but they are an entry point to talk about some of the larger physics concepts that do connect to the topics I usually talk about. So using time crystals as a way to introduce some related concept, an interconnected concept that cuts across many different branches of physics, that's exactly what I'm going to do. And I should warn you, condensed matter is not my day-to-day field of physics, so things like the experimental setup I can't talk about in detail, which is one reason why I'm focusing on the higher level concepts surrounding a topic like time crystals. First, the name, time crystal. Bad name? Worst name? I don't know. That is not... We all know I'm not in charge of naming things, even though I try. And just time crystal just sounds so horrible to me. It conjures up so many things that have absolutely nothing to do with with physics or even science that I hesitate to even use the name, but the name is the name. It's stuck with it. We have to call them time crystals. And when I first started preparing this episode, I committed. I said, I'm gonna do an episode on time crystals. Here I am. And I opened up Wikipedia and yeah. I mean, when it comes to astronomy and astrophysics, Wikipedia is largely okay. I would say 80% of the articles are 80% correct, something like that. That's not bad. But this one, though, just yikes. Nothing in the Wikipedia write-up on time crystals is especially glaringly, obviously, fantastically wrong, but it's such a jumble of bits and pieces and concepts with so little supporting context that it's easy to get tangled up. And honestly, the Wikipedia article, if you start reading it from top to bottom, you're going to come out worse than when you started. I came out worse than when I started. I had some understanding of time crystals and the physics behind, read the Wikipedia article, and I felt like I had lost some brain cells. Like there was something wrong with me that I could not comprehend physics anymore. I was able to get connected. At least one thing Wikipedia does well is it gives you links to a lot of the primary research. So I was able to pull up the original articles, follow the development over the past 10, 15 years of the thought of time crystals and kind of reconstruct a picture. And yes, I'm going to admit, I check Wikipedia when I'm preparing episodes. I like to see how the topic is usually presented, if there's been any big holes in common understanding that I need to fill in, what's missing. And you know what? Double check dates, names, and numbers and whatnot. Wikipedia is a fantastic resource. I have no animosity towards Wikipedia. I do have a slight amount of animosity towards this article. And don't get me started on the popular press depictions of time crystal. Too late, you got me started. I have a plea. If you're a reporter, if you're listening right now and you're a reporter, I want you to please listen to me. If you know a reporter, I want you to sit them down and listen to what I'm about to say. I'm begging you. If you don't know what you're typing, stop typing. I know you have deadlines. I know you're under a crunch. I know you're under so many restrictions. But if you're typing something or you're saying something, and you don't understand what you're typing or what you're saying, you run a tremendous risk of making things worse. Most of the time, I will be fair, most of the time, most popular science articles I read are just fine. You have to glaze over details. You have to build big picture. You have to drop a lot of the details and caveats. I get that. I have to do that in the show. I only have, 20 to 40 minutes or whatever to talk about a topic. So I have to take a step back sometimes. I don't have a problem with it. But every once in a while, I run into an article or a headline. Headlines themselves tend to be a little bit worse than the articles. And it's just wrong. And I could tell if you had spent a little bit more time talking to a scientist, not necessarily me, but a scientist in the field, get a clearer picture. And if you're incapable, of getting that clearer picture, because, a lot of this stuff is super complicated and you don't have an infinite amount of time to digest it. I get it. Maybe we shouldn't write the article about it. Just tossing that out there. Sorry, I'm getting a little fired up about this. If you're a reporter and you're talking about something or writing about something and you're intentionally making things up as you go, then I suggest you just get another job. I'm sorry, but that is not the world we need to live in. I will say most reporters are great. I've had extremely good relationships with many, many reporters. Most of the time, most of you are doing a swell job, and I have to give you a little applause. That's me clapping. You're doing a fantastic job, but some amongst your ranks are giving you a bad name and making it very, very hard to communicate science and educate people and share how the universe really works. Let's get to it. Rant over. A crystal is a normal crystal. You might be wearing one on your hand right now or around your neck. A crystal is a structure that repeats in space. A time crystal is a structure that repeats in time. On one hand, it seems innocent enough. Like, what's the big deal? Okay, whatever. But on the other, it seems perilous. I can't say this word. That's how perilous it is. Perilously close to a perpetual motion machine. If it repeats in time of its own accord, you don't do anything. No one's touching it. No one's messing with it. And it's just spinning around or doing whatever the time crystal might want to do. That seems like a perpetual motion machine, which shouldn't be a thing allowed in physics. So I need to backtrack about 36 steps and set up why time crystals might or might not be interesting and what the implications of their existence are. Fair enough. Good, because that's really the only plan I have. I want you to imagine a broad plain. No features, no hills, no cracks, no trees, not even a horizon. A limitless and perfectly flat plain. Imagine walking on this perfectly flat plain. You could never determine an absolute position. There's no center. There's no edge. There's no reference point that everyone can agree on. You can measure relative differences. If there's someone else on that broad flat plane, you can say, oh, I'm five footsteps away from you. So you can determine relative positions, but absolute positions are impossible to determine. Because it's absolutely featureless, that plane is symmetric in space. It means you can pick a random spot. Any spot will do, because they're all the same. Do a science experiment, get a result. Pick up your gear, go to another random spot, repeat the science experiment, you'll get the exact same answer. That's what we mean by symmetric in space. This symmetry leads directly to a conservation law. In this case, a symmetry in space leads directly to the law of conservation of momentum. On this broad, flat, featureless plane, momentum is conserved. Momentum can transfer from one object to another. Like if two objects collide, they can transfer momentum from one object to another, but the total amount of momentum must stay the same. This connection between symmetry and conservation laws is a mathematical truth. In mathematics, we can prove things to be true. If you assume A, B, C, you can prove X, Y, Z, inescapable conclusion. And that is an inescapable conclusion. If you have symmetries, you have an associated conservation law. This is thanks to the work in the early 20th century of a mathematician by the name of Emmy Noether. I'm pretty sure the German pronunciation is something like Noether. You can tell I'm not a native German speaker. So I'm going to go with what it reads in English as Noether, Emmy Noether. Absolutely brilliant mathematician in the early 20th century. She created a theorem. She devised a theorem, discovered a theorem, whatever you do to bring theorems into existence. This theorem, Noether's theorem, if a symmetry exists, there is an associated conservation law. I'm sure you've heard of conservation of momentum, conservation of energy. These are all tied to symmetries. And I can't understate how huge this is in physics. High energy physics, condensed matter physics are essentially searches for symmetries which give us natural laws. You have a symmetry in space, boom, conservation of momentum. You have a symmetry in rotations. Can you turn the experiment around and get the same result? Boom, conservation of angular momentum. Do you have a symmetry in time? Can you do the experiment, wait a little bit, and get the exact same answer? Boom, you have conservation of energy. There are symmetries in the equations that describe electromagnetics. This leads to a conserved quantity that you may know as the electric charge. Electric charge is conserved. There are fundamental symmetries in the electromagnetic equations. These are connected directly together. This is huge. This is modern physics at the theoretical level, at the high level, is a search for symmetries in nature because that gives us natural laws. But this connection can be broken. Well, if you go back to that broad plane, the broad, flat, featureless plane where there's an obvious symmetry which gives you a conservation of momentum. What if a bunch of cracks appear? What if a tree appears? Now, absolute positions can be determined. Like, hey, I'm 5 steps away from the tree. In that case, if the symmetry is broken and conservation of momentum can be violated, what if it started to rain? What if a voice appeared asking for contributions to patreon.com/PM Sutter, which is how I keep these shows and more going through your generous contributions, patreon.com/PM Sutter. Go there now, please. I'm sorry, I'm on a search to find the worst way possible to interject the Patreon begging bits. I have not found it yet, but I feel like I'm pretty close. What if it started to rain? What if a voice appeared? Then absolute time could be measured. I'm like, oh, it's been 10 heartbeats since the last time a raindrop fell. This symmetry in time would be broken and conservation of energy could be violated. In the real world, get away from the broad flat plane. If the equations describing a system, if there's some physical scenario and we use some mathematical equations to describe that interaction, that scenario, if those equations exhibit certain symmetries, then the associated conservation law applies. If the symmetries get broken, well, interesting things can happen. And symmetries in our equations can get broken in two ways. One, on purpose. If I start smacking something, I'm changing the symmetry of that system. And so conservation of momentum, conservation of energy can be violated in some cases. Or what's a little bit more interesting is what we call spontaneous symmetry breaking, which is kind of super important in the entirety of physics. Spontaneous symmetry breaking happens when the equations describing a system have all sorts of symmetries, but the actual solution in that particular scenario doesn't. Let me explain that. There's a difference between the equations and the solutions. Just like when I talked about in the last episode about the existence of black holes, we have a machine called general relativity, and then it produces solutions to particular scenarios. This isn't just general relativity. It's all over physics. We develop machines that give us particular solutions in particular scenarios. We develop the machine and we can apply it here, we can apply it there, we can apply it to this. Oh, that system over there, we can use this set of equations, we can use this machine to describe it. Oh, what's happening up there? Oh, perfect, I've got this other machine that can describe that scenario. The equations give general interactions, but must be solved for each individual case. And those solutions may showcase, may exhibit different properties than their mother equations. I know all this is math, but hey, physics is a mathematical description of nature, so here we are. Symmetry breaking, spontaneous symmetry breaking happens all the time. For example, in a normal, everyday, happy-go-lucky crystal. Not a time crystal, just crystal. The electric force, the force that describes the interactions between electrons, molecules, whatnot, is totally symmetric. It is. It doesn't care about where you are in space. It just does its thing. It's just the electric force, whatever. But a crystal, a particular application of the electric force, where the detailed relationship between the molecular bonds forces this periodic structure, it repeats itself in space, that is not symmetric. In the general generic, electric force momentum is conserved, but in a crystal, momentum is not always conserved. And in fact, we've observed this. There's a particular process that involves yet another German word. It's double German word day today on Ask a Spaceman. It's called the Umklapp process. My apologies to any German speakers for my horrendous pronunciation. But it means flipped over, or flipped over, something like that. You can have inside of a crystal two waves going the same direction, and then they intersect and they gather together and produce a wave going in the opposite direction. Imagine two cars barreling down the highway in the same direction, you know, parallel lanes. Then they crash into each other, and after the crash, they're going the exact opposite direction. You would normally say, hey, that violates conservation of momentum. And you're right. Because with two cars traveling down a highway, there's a symmetry there. And so we don't expect momentum conservation to be violated. But in a crystal, exactly that can happen because there's no longer that symmetry. The symmetry is gone, so the conservation law can be violated. It happens. It's a part of our life. I know it's super unintuitive. This does not make natural sense. This is not how we are taught in high school. This is not how we are taught in college. This is not how we understand the normal everyday picture of our world. That's because in most cases of everyday physics, these symmetries apply totally fine. And so the conservation laws are applied all the time. But there are cases where the symmetries get broken and the conservation laws simply don't apply. Mother Nature doesn't care if you find her intuitive or not. We've found, over the decades of looking, examples of all the possible symmetries of nature getting broken in one case or another, except one. There was one lone holdout symmetry that we have never seen broken. And that was the symmetry of time translation. The one where if you do an experiment, you get one result, then you wait a little bit or a long bit, doesn't matter, you repeat the experiment, you should get the exact same answer. That time translation symmetry is connected to conservation of energy. Where there is time translation symmetry, there is conservation of energy. And that's where time crystals come in. Since time crystals repeat in time, they form a structure, and that structure can cycle to another structure, say a B structure, then it goes back to A structure, B, kind of flips back and forth like a clock. But it's doing this in its ground state. It's doing it in its minimum energy configuration. This is very interesting because when you excite a molecule or an atom or a physical system, when you're dumping in energy and you make it in some awkward state, you can usually do anything you want. Usually that means you're already violating some symmetry because you're adding energy to the system or you're perturbing it, you're knocking it sideways, you're punching it in the face. And so you don't expect these symmetries to be there, and so you don't expect the conservation laws to hold inside the system. But if you're in a ground state, no one's touching it, no one's bothering it. It's in its minimum energy configuration. Like you at the bottom of a hill. Imagine if you were sitting at the bottom of a hill and you just started rolling back and forth. That's kind of sort of what a time crystal is doing. And because a time crystal repeats in time, there's a breaking of the symmetry, of the time translation symmetry, which means conservation of energy can be broken in the vicinity of these time crystals. And that seems interesting. This was first proposed back in 2012. Since then, there's been a lot of theoretical back and forth, a lot of arguing, and they've been nice short papers too, like 2 or 4 pages long, really easy to digest papers. So thanks a lot, condensed matter theorist colleagues. for making my life easier. It was eventually proven, like the idea was floated, like, hey, everyone, maybe time crystals are a thing. And a while later, it was proven not to happen in equilibrium systems. An equilibrium system, this is connected to the concepts in thermodynamics. An equilibrium system, by definition, is there's no change in time. It's you just totally let it go, and it's relaxed, it's chill, it's equilibrium. Equilibrium systems do not change in time. So yeah, time crystals can't exist in an equilibrium state, but they can exist in what we call a non-equilibrium system, which is a rapidly growing branch of physics that I will not discuss too much right now. There have been some recent experiments that claim to have found real-life time crystals. They constructed specific apparatus. I won't go into the deep experimental details. Essentially, they made a ring of atoms, let an electron bounce from one atom to another in the ring, and they used a pulsed laser to drive it. So they're shooting it like, pew, pew, pew. But they noticed that the electron would bounce around between the atoms at a fixed frequency, regardless of how fast they were driving that laser. So if they went really fast, pew, 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 the electron would bounce, 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 bounce. And if they went really slow, like pew, pew, this is the exact noise that lasers make, by the way, pew, pew, the electron would still bounce around at its same bounce, 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 at its same regular pace. That was their argument, that this system is in its ground state. It doesn't matter. Yes, we have to knock it out of equilibrium, but it's in a relaxed state. It's in a minimum energy configuration, and it's repeating in time. So we have a system that repeats in time. It's a time crystal. That means its symmetry in time is broken. And by Noether's theorem, that means conservation of energy in a time crystal isn't always obeyed. Gasp. I typed that word in my notes. Isn't the conservation of energy an iron law of the universe never to be violated? No, it isn't. Conservation of energy only applies in time symmetric cases. If there's no time symmetry in your system, then you don't get a conservation of energy. And conservation of energy is violated all the time because not all systems are symmetric in time. That's just it. That's just how the universe works. What does it mean for time crystals to violate conservation of energy and time symmetry? Well, it doesn't mean we have to rewrite the laws of physics. I mean, the laws of physics kind of predicted their existence. It doesn't mean we have to rewrite our knowledge of time. It doesn't mean we get to understand dark energy. These are some of the things I've seen in the popular press accounts, et cetera, et cetera. It's not earth-shattering. It also means this time crystal can't last forever. It is not in equilibrium, even though it's driven. Even though it's in its ground state, it still has to be driven by an external source. So it's not quite in equilibrium, but it can take a very, 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 very long time to reach its equilibrium state. If it's radiating, if it's giving off radiation, eventually it'll lose energy. And it doesn't break conservation of energy forever, just for a really, really long time, at least when it comes to the subatomic realm. Just like normal crystals, which why aren't we calling them space crystals now? Just like normal crystals, they're not perfectly static. They won't stay as a crystal forever. Eventually, they'll disassemble. It'll just take a bajillion years for it to do it. So effectively, they're stable, but over time, they lose coherence. Eventually, a time crystal will lose coherence. It's in its ground state. It's not in an excited state, so we can't extract energy of it. We can't extract energy from it. So it might move around essentially forever, you know, a very, very long time, but it's not a machine. So it's not a perpetual motion machine. It just kind of moves of its own accord and we can't do anything with it. And it's not continuous time breaking. It's just periodic time breaking, which is a slightly different kind of symmetry. It's neat. It's nifty. It's kind of cool. And if you're now more confused than ever, well, now you know why I need to be careful about picking my entry points into quantum mechanics. I'll repeat some of that to try to drive home this point. Time crystals are interesting because they break conservation of energy. Time crystals are not interesting because they do so in a very limited, predictable way that doesn't mean all physics is out the window. We know that conservation of energy can be broken anytime you violate time symmetry, and here we have a case of time symmetry being broken in its ground state. That's the new part. The new part is violation of conservation of energy in the ground state of a system, in its minimum energy configuration. We don't have to add energy. We don't have to bump it up to another energy level to see this conservation of energy. That is the new part, and that's interesting. Just like a normal crystal, space crystal from now on, breaks the conservation momentum in its ground state, but that doesn't mean all physics is out the window. So it's less, holy cow, what do we do now? And more, oh, hey, cool, I was wondering if that could happen. It turns out that there are cases where all the conservation laws can be broken in the ground state of some system, that the symmetries of nature can be violated in some select cases. There was this one holdout about time symmetry. Turns out it's not so much of a holdout anymore. The reason I did this episode, besides to introduce the phrase space crystal, which I think should be a thing now, feel free to put it on Twitter and Facebook and tag me at Paul Metzler. You can blame me. Is that this episode is an object lesson. Time crystals are an object lesson in the conservation of energy and momentum, or whatever. These conservation laws are not ironclad rules of the universe that apply in all situations. They can be broken, and they're broken all the time. There's very specific reasons why they get broken, and understanding those reasons is important for understanding the physical system. And this concept that conservation of energy, conservation of momentum, is not an ironclad law of the universe, that's important. That will be very, very important in future episodes like what dark energy is. So I can, when I go to do those episodes and I get to the point where I say, oh yeah, conservation of energy is broken here and I'm not sweating, I sleep at night, it's totally fine, I can say, I told you so. It's because I did an episode on why that's not a big deal. It is a big deal. Time, here we are. Time crystals are interesting, but they're also not interesting. So there you go. There's structures that repeat in time, and that's interesting, but not a big deal. There we go. Thank you so much for my top Patreon contributors this month, Helgi B, Justin G, Justin R, Kevin O, Jessica K, and Chris C, along with all my other unnamed but equally valid and important Patreon contributors. You can join their lofty ranks, prestigious ranks, by going to patreon.com/PMSutter, where this show is made possible by those contributions, along with all of my science communication and outreach efforts. Thanks big time to Kiet N on YouTube and Benji on email for asking what are time crystals, getting this episode going. You can follow me Facebook and Twitter at Paul Matt Sutter. Keep those questions coming to hashtag Ask a Spaceman. Go to iTunes, give the show a rating. Tell your friends, tell your enemies, tell your kids, tell your parents, tell your pets, tell your neighbors. Blast it on a radio so that in 100,000 years, a civilization on the far side of the universe can know that this show existed. And I'll see you next time for more complete knowledge of time and space.